Okay. Let's start. Hello and welcome to my talk. It's about our use case. So it's just a use case. It's not a technical deep dive or something like this. My name is Sebastian Breitschneider, and I'm working as a Linux system engineer at Bitgroup in Germany. And my main responsibilities are the working with CloudStack, Ansible, Ceph, Linux, and all the other infrastructure related stuff. If you want to contact me later, you can use some of the links. You also can meet me if you are in Germany, at the user groups of CloudStack German user group or the Ansible user group in Dresden, which is, by the way, organized by my company, which is the Bitgroup. Our main business is the consulting for SAP products, every kind of SAP product. We also do some development for SAP, for example, the cloud platform of SAP, and we do the operations of their data centers. So we are now part of the intelligence group, which is part of Entity Data since last year. And at the bottom you have some facts about our company. The content for this talk is, I will talk about the challenge we had, the environment we got, and then a bit about Ansible with some examples. And two parts we had to develop on our own, and at the end, a picture of all of this together. Okay, first, the challenge we had. So when we started to develop this cloud platform for our customers, we needed a user interface for our customers. So the problem is, you have a lot of services in your cloud. So as you know, it's not just CloudStack, you also need backup, monitoring, what else, and a lot of services. So you can offer your customers several links to access all these tools, or you create one on your own and implement all these subservices in one user interface. That's what we wanted to have. So the second thing is, we wanted to have that all operations you trigger are created by the administrators. So the advantage of this is, the developers which develop the user interface don't need to know the complete knowledge about the infrastructure and how services work there and how to trigger something on these services. Then we wanted to have a consistent configurations over all systems. Means, we see this in other clouds, you deploy systems from templates. So these templates look all the same, but when you come to the point with the application installation is not triggered by a template, it's made by hand. So you end up with little differences between all these systems. In the case of an error, it makes it much harder to resolve this. So we wanted to avoid this. Then we wanted to use as much open source as possible. Then we wanted to have scalability over all these systems we use. We wanted to have a modular design so we can change single parts of our cloud and the customer don't notice. And it should be as simple as possible. That is the challenge. we had. So the environment we have now is we use KVM as the hypervisor, Ceph and NFS as storage backends, and we orchestrate this with CloudSec. So as you know, network, storage, compute, all in CloudSec, CloudSec managed. And we have advanced networking setup in CloudSec based on VLANs. And we use shared and isolated networks. The automation is completely done by Ansible. And as I told you, we had to develop something on our own. One is the user interface. We call it Portal for the moment. So, and the other part is the Ansible daemon. I will show you later what it's about. So a bit about Ansible. Why did we choose Ansible? We choose it because, at least for me, it's the simplest configuration and deployment tool I know, because you get it working in a couple of hours. You don't need weeks or months to get it working. Because you have an agentless architecture, means all operations on the clients are done via SSH or WinRM if you are on Windows. And you don't need any programming skills, so because the automation is written in JML, so it's just a markup language, you really don't need any programming skills. And you cannot only deploy systems, you can also configure them, you can deploy applications, whatever you want. That's why we choose Ansible. So Ansible works with modules, and one other reason why we choose Ansible is you have already at the moment 36 modules just for CloudSec. So at all you have around about 1,000 modules where you can trigger stuff on other orchestration platforms or do stuff on Linux, Windows, and you just do this with these modules. So how do we get Ansible working with CloudSec? Of course, you have to install Ansible. That's the first step. And the second step is to install the Python CloudSec modules. You can do this with pip or with aptitude. And the second thing you need is a configuration file called the CloudSec ini file. And yeah, you can put it in your home directory, working directory, or provide the location via a variable. And the content of this configuration file you see at the bottom, it's similar to CloudMonkey. If you know CloudMonkey, the configuration file looks pretty the same. You need the endpoint of the API of CloudSec, then an API key and an API secret. That's it. Then you can start working. Then the workflow is pretty simple. You just call the Ansible module. The module is talking to the CloudSec API. CloudSec will do some magic. For example, build up some VMs. And at the end, you can start to configure your created VMs or deploy app on these VMs. That's all. So now, some examples. Ansible work with playbooks. So at the top you can see a playbook. It runs on localhost, because the way Ansible works is you create tasks and these tasks are executed on your destination host. So in this case, when we want to do something on CloudSec, we want to call the API and we do it with this Ansible host. That's because we run it on localhost. And in this example, we just call the role CSVM. And at the bottom, you can see the tasks of this role. So we have three tasks. First, create the VM. Second, add this Ansible or add this new host, which you created, to Ansible. So afterwards, we can start to configure this host. And the third part is to roll out the SSH key to this new created VM. And at the bottom, you see a little class, do these steps only when we want to create a VM. And then this creation is done by one Ansible module called CS Instance. And here you see the parameters of this module. Some of them are, of course, mandatory, like the VM name, the template, project zone, and some of them are optional, for example, the hypervisor. So, and at the bottom, you can see we register something in a variable that's the answer of the CloudSec API. So, for example, we register this in a variable because we want to know the root password of this new created VM, that we can access this VM later. Another example is this port forwarding module, and it works the same way, pretty easy. You have some options you have to set, and that's it. You can find all these options in the Ansible documentation of this module, what you want to use. So as I told you before, we had to develop some stuff on our own. The first is the user interface, of course. Here you can see an example of the Create VM screen. So, and this user interface communicates now with all the services, CloudStack, Ansible, backup, monitoring, and so on, all the services we have. The second part we had to develop on our own was the Ansible daemon. This daemon talks to the user interface, and it does all the playbook handling. For example, it lists you all the playbook, it runs the playbook, it can run just in command. You get an overview over all running jobs or the status of a job when it's running, and you can get some statistics, and you have a scheduler built in, so you can run a task tomorrow 3 a.m. or you want to run a playbook once a week. You can all do this with this daemon, and it talks via REST API to the user interface. When we see this all together, you have the user interface, the portal, and you get all the information what is going on in CloudStack in this portal, because it reads the information from the CloudStack API. And if you want to trigger something, you just trigger the Ansible daemon, and the Ansible daemon will write all the stuff. For example, you will build up a new VM or attach or create a storage to a VM, you trigger the Ansible daemon to trigger an Ansible role, and then it will do these tasks. Or you just deploy an app on your VM, it goes directly to this VM. So where did we end up? We got this user interface with all the services. We have integrated CloudStack, the automation, the backup tool, monitoring, all our services. And we have all write operations in automation. Every stuff which is triggered or changed is done by Ansible. And we, the administrators, are writing the automation, so the developers don't need any knowledge how stuff works there. We have this modular design we wanted, so we can change every single part of our cloud and the customer don't notice. So when we change, for example, the backup system, the customer don't notice this. And we used as much open source as we could. I think only the switches are not open source, all the rest of the software and stuff we use is open source. For example, as a ticket system, we use OTRS and monitoring is Nagios with Jack MK, the storage Ceph, CloudStack, all open source. And we have an API for the user, so he can talk directly to this user interface via the API and trigger stuff with their own automation or whatever. And we got the scalability. Some of them came from the application itself, for example, Ceph or CloudStack. And the other scalability, for example, with Ansible. So if you have a big cloud and you have just one Ansible host, you don't have really scalability. So we have in our setup one Ansible host in every customer project. So, and there we get this scalability, the same with LDAP and monitoring. We have this one service machine, and so we spread the workload over all these machines. That's it from my side. Any questions?
The API you're talking about, is that something you created yourselves, or are you wrapping up CloudStack and
No, it's built on our own, yeah.
Would Ceph underlying storage, what version of Ceph are you using?
At the moment, Hammer. But
any issues with it?
No, not at all. At first, we had some issues. First, we used, for example, as the underlying OS, Debian. And we used BTRFS as the file system, and this is not really a good combination. So then we switched.
You mean BTRFS on top of the block device, right?
For the file system on the host.
Yeah.
The OSD's file system was BTRFS. So we changed this now to X4, and the OS is now Ubuntu. And now it works perfectly.
Do you use Ansible Tower or something like that?
No, not open source. And you have to pay for every machine. And we needed this special setup. We wanted to talk to our user interface, and that's why we created this daemon on our own.
So the user interface you create is not directly talking to CloudStack, it's talking to Ansible, and Ansible is talking to CloudStack, that is?
All reading access is done directly from CloudStack, but all writing operations are done by the automation.
And you're using, a version tool for keeping track of the changes? For example, changing in a playbook?
Git.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, when we, as I told you, we have one service machine in every customer project. When we build up this VM, it's done by Ansible, and then one step is to clone a Git repository with all these playbooks. Okay, then, thanks.
und ich war von der Landsicht, also ich habe richtig früher meine Stimme flattern. Du brauchst am Anfang ein bisschen dein Gesicht aus, du kannst das bitte verraten. Und zum Schluss? Das machen wir so blöd. Aber irgendwo gut, echt gut. Ach, klappt so das Ding. Mit.
Naja, was ist denn hier mit runterfahren?
Ja, das ist das Kacke 7.
Ah, und hier lag meine Siegessicherte.
Alter, komm, los. Guck mal jetzt. Alter.
Ja,
hab ich irgendwas vergessen?
Na.
So you are aware of that it will take a little bit more time because the template is not on the local storage?
Yeah.
So you can tell the customer, okay, you need to come on that. Fine, thank
you.
Yeah.
You have no memo to your actually copy of the secondary storage also.
Yeah, the local one is all I think we should. We did a snapshot and then we created a new volume from the.
Actually, it should be very easy to fix.
Yeah, it should be. It should be right.
Yeah, you need to get your modules.
Yeah, the code is with the developers, that's the problem.
Can you just the file up?
Yeah.
I don't think all the code is there. It's only the local storage is there. Just one side sheet instead of copying it to secondary and all secondary. Actually, it's also a kind of combination of order. It can be closed.
face of the company.
They have so many different products.
And they have your investor, which is so much pressuring the CEOs at the CEO change, right? That they can fire the CEO. Temple, possibly. I think they will divide NetScaler out of, maybe divide from Zen Desktop or Zenact. Let's see how it tricks.
They're the Zen Server Cloud
competition. Then they changed the licensing model, because with the Cloud Stack, Cloud Platform Center was licensed, and then they changed it. It's really nice. But I hope Accelerate will.
Okay, let's get started. Okay. So today I'll just talk about integration of a virtual SAN with CloudTrack. So basically I am Satish. I am an Apache committer. So I've been working with CloudTrack community for the past 5 years. I've been developing a lot of features from the VMware front for CloudStack. So earlier I was also working on OpenStack development. I have introduced OpenStack integration for VMware. So VMware hypervisor could be used as a host for OpenStack. So later on I've been working since 2012 on CloudStack development. So I have added a lot of features on the networking and storage area, basically, for CloudStack. So if you look at the primary storage in CloudStack, the primary storage is where you have volumes and VM snapshots stored, okay? And then primary storage can be of various scopes, so local storage, and cluster-wide storage, and zone-wide storage. So zone-wide storage means the one storage, primary storage, which is connected to each and every host in the zone. All clusters will have access to that storage in the same way. So apart from that, if you look at the current support of primary storage in VMware, in CloudStack, you have, if you look at the VMware hypervisor, you have NFS protocol and VMFS protocol support. So in addition to that, there is another type of data store in VMware environment, that is a vSAN data store, that which is a hyper-converged infrastructure that VMware is pushing for. So that is the main thing in that VMware's roadmap for winning the hyper-converged market. So currently CloudStack doesn't support vSAN as a primary storage. Okay, so it can support only NFS based NFS share or a iSCSI LAN as a primary storage. So the plan is to add a vSAN data store as a primary storage so that end user can create volumes and use vSAN storage of a cluster just the same way as he is currently using NFS or iSCSI storage. So what is vSAN? Basically vSAN is all about software-defined storage modeling that VMware is pushing for. And then if you look at the vSAN architecture, you have a group of ESXi hosts where in a cluster, and then each host may or may not have included different a disk virtual. It can have a hard disk or may not have hard disk. So taking the contribution of the storage from each host, the vSAN layer will abstract out a single data store kind of you have an NFS storage somewhere else and then projected out to the cluster. So the entire cluster will be shown a single disk image kind of abstraction. Okay, so it is completely optional that a host joining in the cluster can participate or may participate with a storage with it or may not. I mean, you can have a host without any disk at all, which is participating in the cluster, still it can have access to the vSAN and it can run VMs where the virtual disk of the VM will not be having any storage on the host, but its virtual disk will be somewhere else in other host. Within the cluster, they will be stored in another host. So that's what is abstraction, that's how they are doing. For example, if you look at this diagram, you have these many hosts. This host may or may not have the hard disk. Still it is fine. This VM will run in this host, but virtual disk may be somewhere here. So that's what is this layer is doing. This layer is taking care of the way the disk writes are handled. This layer will take disk write from the VM and it will route the traffic over a vSAN network. vSAN, you might have heard of vMotion traffic. Okay, in VMware world, you have vMotion traffic, fault tolerance traffic, management traffic. So there are lots of kinds of traffic, data traffic. They are categorized and treated with the various priorities, various service level guarantees. Okay, so vSAN introduces something like vSAN traffic, where the data, two kinds of traffic will be there in vSAN. One is metadata that checks the heartbeat where my object is there. So eventually any virtual disk will be split into lots of objects and then each object will be stored somewhere else. vSAN layer knows and it tracks each and every object. So objects will be again saved in multiple copy manner such that fault tolerance policy setting, like if you set fault tolerance setting to 2, mean there should be at least 3 copies in the system. That even if you have 2 failures, FTT means failures, to number of failures to be tolerated. So if you have 2 failures, for example, there are 3 disks here, assume that there are no additional disks, only 3 hosts. If you set it to FTT to 2, means 3 copies will be there, but don't think that the entire VMDK will be here. VMDK is eventually lots of pieces. And then pieces will be like BitTorrent, you have lots of pieces will be traveling across the network. The same way the pieces will be stored anywhere, okay? If this guy goes down this particular disk group, this is one disk group, this is one disk group. Disk group in the sense, two spindles, think like two independent spindles. One disk can crash, but still another disk can survive. So that disk group should be available across in the same identical configuration. If you have 2 disks here, all the hosts which are contributing should have 2 disks. So in that way, if any failure happens for this disk group, this other disk group should be having that. So objects of that particular disk, so that the disk is still available for the VM. VM may be running in this host, but data can be here and here. And then the way it is, pieces are organized. They will still be constituted together to show virtual disk successfully to the VM. That's all about the vSAN basically. So what is it bringing actually is lots of advantages where you have
It can run on standard x86 server. And the main advantage is the policy-based management, which I'll explain in the next slide. So this is pretty much integrated into the VMware kernel, so that performance will be very good. So additional communication framework is not required at all. It's completely embedded into the kernel. And then we have high performance flash architecture. Like if you see, there is an SSD and hard disk. It's a hybrid kind of combination where the writes of the VM first go to SSD. Every host that joins vSAN cluster must have at least one SSD. It may or may not have disk, but it must have SSD, because the VM writes first come to SSD. From SSD, the vSAN layer handles the data and then transports to different host, and wherever the hard disk are available, it will send the objects there. And it has ability to do hot deduplication. Hot deduplication means as the writes are coming live, it will do deduplication. It's like a stream that writes are coming from the VM, they will be efficiently handled. So the SSD and hard disk combination will give you very good throughput. And then you can actually scale very horizontally, very easily, and not much high-end expertise is required to administer this kind of system. Simply add traditional host, and not necessarily that you have to add hard disk, because you may not have hard disk. Sometimes you want more computing power, just add one more computer, just another server without any disk. But sometimes you want more disk, just add more disk to the existing host. That we can scale out very easily. That's about that. So that's about the linear and dimensional scaling. So and low TCO. So total cost of ownership is really very less actually. You can efficiently we can leverage this vSAN data stores. And main thing here, CloudStack can leverage. And from the usability perspective and efficiency perspective is policy-based range management. So in vSAN, we can have policy-based objects. You can have vSAN objects which will be arranged and managed by policy. So end user can simply define a policy which can be sitting here. Okay, and then vSAN is responsible for implementing the policy at the storage level. So according to the SLA, whatever the policy is defined, that will be implemented by vSAN. CloudStack doesn't need to worry about policy implementation, but CloudStack lets administrator specify the policy in the disk offering. So all we are looking at here is CloudStack has lots of volumes, okay, and then each volume you want to assign some storage policy. So that storage policy, in the sense, I'll show you a policy here. For example, then you get better understanding of that. Policy is a collection of properties. Simply here, okay. It's in presentation mode. Here I am creating a new policy. So we'd let administrator create a policy in vCenter, because in CloudStack also you could have given an interface and then created provided another API to create a policy and then store the policy details all in your DB, or add these policy parameters all in disk offering. We could have taken any approach, but simpler approach is that we would let admin whatever UI he is acquainted with before. Normally most of the VMware admins should be very comfortable with their VMware web client. Okay, this is where they can define the policies. Okay, so they can give any name here. So there are rule sets. At least one rule set should be there. This is the vSAN rule set. These are the rules. One is you have a number of describes per object and flash read cache reservation, number of failures to tolerate. This is what I was now specifying a few minutes before, that number of failures to be tolerated so that those many required copies will be created in the system. So all you need to do is select this. For example, number of failures to tolerate is 1 here. So all you have to say, this is the default value. You can actually add more if your vSAN is designed to have more than one disk group. Okay, and then IOPS limit you can specify. These many IOPS will be guaranteed for the particular volume sitting in the vSAN. Okay, and you have force provisioning, means 100% provisioning will be there for the object. All the pre-allocated, all the data required, storage requirement of the volume will be pre-allocated. So there are pretty much so many rules would be there, and all user have to do is just create a policy that as according to their requirement. Okay. Okay, so the idea is to let administrator specify the policy in our while defining the disk offering, and then the same policy will be implemented at the level of storage by vSAN. What CloudStack does is associate the policy to the volume when it is creating a volume from a disk offering. When you are creating a volume, you must have chosen some disk offering, because without disk offering, no disk exists in CloudStack. So in the disk offering, we have the storage policy defined. So when you are creating the volume, we see what the disk offering associated for that, and then read the storage policy, query the particular storage policy from vCenter, because administrator have defined it in the vCenter first, and then specified the same name in CloudStack data store offering definition. So CloudStack just queries vCenter for storage policy and then associates that policy with the volume or instance. If you are creating an instance, it is a root volume. What is in question here? Root volumes will be associated with the storage policy. If it is data volume, then data volume would be associated. So that's how the policy association goes. And then if you look at the other integration aspect, if you look at the other important things are that we must do some code changes to support vSAN as a data store, vSAN data store as a primary storage in CloudStack. So that requires some changes, because primary storage level over provisioning have to be supported. All those things that we support for NFS and VMFS, the same similar features have to be supported for vSAN. So a lot of code changes were done in that area. So, and also we need to make sure that entire volume lifecycle operations over vSAN should be supported, just like you support for NFS and VMFS. All operations must be supported. If your volume is landing on a vSAN data store, after getting created, whatever operation you do with the volume, it should be seamless, just like it is sitting on the other primary storages that we support today. Apart from that, you can specify policy at the level of volume as well as instance. If you specify at the instance level, all volumes within that VM will get the same policy applicable. So also we can support one more thing, like updating a storage policy. Assume somebody has created a volume with some ABC storage policy. After some time they thought like, okay, I want now a XYZ because of some reason. Then CloudStack today offers something like a disk offering update, where you can change a volume's disk offering from A to B. Okay, so all admin have to do is create another disk offering with XYZ, because he wants the new policy XYZ to be inflicted on the particular volume. So all he has to do, create new offering and then shift the offering, which we call as a disk offering update or upgrade. So that you can use that API or UI also, it is there. And CloudStack will take care of switching the policy according to the updated disk offering. So we don't have much time, so we'll skip through this. I'll show a few UI fragments actually. Looks like there is some problem here. Server is not up. Okay, I think let's discuss some limitations that are there in the existing implementation. Limitation as such, if you see, no zone-wide primary storage means because vSAN is a data store of scope only cluster. VMware defines and manages the vSAN only at the cluster level, then it is not possible to provide zone-wide storage facility here. So we'll just have only cluster-wide storage for vSAN. So apart from that, we have something like managed storage, where we can create volumes on the vSAN data store, where you can have a latest version of the vSphere. vSAN is a 6.5 version, where you can create iSCSI LANs out of the vSAN system. Just like your FCSAN or iSCSI SAN, you can create iSCSI LANs, right? In the same way, you can create LANs on vSAN also. But that's coming in latest version only. This particular integration is done for vSAN 6.2, where we don't have that LAN support yet. But in next version 6.5, when we support that, we'll be adding that LAN support as well. In that model, managed storage integration model, what we do is when you request a volume for CloudStack, we'll be talking to vSAN and then create a LAN over there, and then that same LAN will be mapped as a volume in CloudStack instance. So that way we can do the integration. So in that way we have to get a new storage plugin which takes care of the managed storage for vSAN. So we'll be getting a new plugin for that. So any questions?
Yeah, it's
I'm having a PR. Actually, I created a branch and I've been working on that. So very soon we'll bring a PR for that in ACS.
So the policy, right, the storage policy, you said they're going to disk offering. It is mapped to disk offering. So what? How is the disk offering table changed now? So either you have.
When user defines a disk offering, so there is a table disk offering details. In the disk offering details, we will be having a key value pair kind of structure where you have storage policy stored associated with this disk offering. So we are not modifying disk offering table because may not be the case that all hypervisors need this storage policy yet. So currently we are putting in disk offering details. So that way we'll reach out to the particular property when we do DB search and then retrieve it and then use it for association. So this is how actually you can see this. This one. This is the table. And then this is the key name. And then this is the offering ID. Disk offering with ID 23 is having this particular key storage policy, and this is the name of the policy that we are creating in the vCenter. So same name have to be given when we are defining, so that we can search and then in the vCenter and then associate it. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
So any policy on the volume will override the VM policy?
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you specify a service offering, and then in the service offering you can specify a policy in two places: service offering and disk offering. Just like I have shown you here, disk offering details. You have another table, service offering details. That's where we store for service offering. So, and then if you choose some ABC policy for service offering, the same will be used for all volumes.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you add a new volume, attach new volume to the VM, then you can simply choose another policy XYZ.
Mm.
And then that XYZ will be associated with the volume because we give more priority to the disk offering. Perfect. And also you can change, for example, you have created a VM with one data volume, one root volume, and then you initially gave only service offering, did not specify any disk offering, then everything will have the same policy. Later on you want to change, you just have to go to the disk offering, and then by updating the disk offering, then you can definitely get. So this volume's disk offering will change from something to something. So the resultant final disk offering, whatever it has storage policy like this, that same policy will be applied on the volume. Mm. Yes. Okay, thank you.